the beginning of Parshas Balosecha presents for us, for the third time, the mitzvah of Hadlokas Saner. And there's a very interesting question that is raised by the Tosfos. In certain Masechtas, in addition to the Tosfos, which grace, of course, the outside of every Masechta, there are additional collections of Tosfos known as Tosfos Yeshanim. And with regards to the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, I'm not sure if it's well known, but although it takes place in the Beis HaMikdash, in principle, lighting the menorah, the Gemara states, does not have the status of Avodah, Beis HaMikdash Avodah proper, in which case it would be only possible for a Kohen to light the menorah. Rather, says the Gemara, even a non-Kohen could light the menorah, in principle. Of course, you'd have a hard time getting into the Beis HaMikdash and out unscathed, but if he's ingenious enough and works out a method, in principle, the menorah is not an avodah, hadlaka bizar kishera. So says the Gemara, so the menorah can be lit by a non-Kohen. And the Tosfos Yeshanim in Maseches Yuma, Daf Kaftalet Omud Beis, raises a simple question in the name of Rabbeinu Yosef, one of the Baalei HaTosfos. And that is, well, look at the beginning of Parshas Balosecha, and you will see that the lighting of the menorah is associated specifically with Aaron. Daber el Aaron, Perek Ches begins, Daber el Aaron, Va'amata elav, Balosecha es haneiros, that's a message to Aaron. Seemingly, the lighting of the menorah is specifically for Aaron. I mean, how are we to reckon with an often apostle? That's the question of the Tosfos Yeshanim. And interestingly, I came across three rather different responses to this question of the Tosfos Yeshanim. How can we say on the one hand, halachically, that lighting the menorah is acceptable even for a non-Kohen, and yet the Torah seems to attach it specifically and exclusively to Aaron? There is a Sforno in the end of Parshas Emor, who says a major chiddush, and that is, and he is also addressing what seems to be there, the association exclusively of the lighting of the menorah with Aaron, and the Sforno states, we know that whereas there are certain rules that apply to the Beis HaMikdash throughout the course of the year, when it comes to a certain day, everything changes. Avodos that perhaps may be permissible for normal Kohanim, or perhaps even non-Kohanim during the course of the year, but when it comes to Yom Kippurim, Achas Bashana, all of the Avodos are performed specifically by the Kohen Gadol. It's his day. Well, that's only once a year. What's that got to do with us? Says the Sforno, Chiddush, the status of the Mishkan, as long as Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar, was that of Yom HaKippurim in future generations. On any given day of the year, the Mishkan in the Midbar had the level of Kippur. Why do I say that? Asks Sforno. Well, in a sense, the hallmark, or the defining characteristic, as the Torah presents it, with regards to Yom Kippur, it's a day when the Shekhinah appears through the cloud. Ki be'anan eira'eh ala kaporis, through the cloud I shall be perceived over the kaporis. Well, in normal circumstances, that cloud is produced by the ketores. However, says Sforno, when it comes to the Mishkan, there was the cloud of Hashem hovering over the Mishkan on a daily basis. They were constantly in a situation that was called Ki Be'anan Eira'eh. And therefore, says Sforno, since every day is Yom Kippur conditions, so to speak, then similarly, it is specifically the Kohen Gadol who will do the avodos that even though in future generations or later times, it would be possible for a non-Kohen Gadol, and perhaps even a non-Kohen to perform them. So this is the answer of the Sforno. Generally, yes, you don't need a Kohen Gadol or a Kohen to light the menorah, but when the Torah talks to Aaron, in Aaron's time, in the Mishkan, as they were in the Midbar, it means specifically Aaron. Conditions were unique to that time. Dafka the Kohen Gadol. So that's the approach of the Sforno. Interestingly, the Ritva, one of the great Rishonim in his Perush on Maseches Yuma, notes the question of the Tosfos, and he has a very different approach. And he draws our attention to the fact, and this is itself a major discussion within Torah, that if you look at the Pasuk that Rabbeinu Yosef drew his question from, our Pasuk in the beginning of the Parsha, Daber el Aaron, Vamartailav, Balosachai Saneiros, it's Aaron, Aaron's lighting the menorah. How can the Gemara say that it's acceptable for anyone to light the menorah? Says the Ritva, one needs to distinguish between when the Torah tells Aaron that he is to light the menorah, under which circumstances the implication is Dafke Aaron. Here the Torah didn't do that. The Torah isn't telling Aaron to light the menorah. The Torah is saying to Aaron, Beha'alosecha et haneros, when you light the menorah, see to it that it's done in the following way, El mul panei menorah, ya'iru shivas haneros. In other words, the Torah did not say to Aaron, Ta'ales haneros. That's a directive to Aaron, implying him and no one else. It's not a tzivui, if we could use that terminology, but rather a loshon sipur. It's not an imperative, it's a descriptive. Aaron, for whatever reasons, and we may yet see, would typically be the one to light the menorah. That doesn't mean that no one else can. The Torah is referring to that practice, that Aaron is the one that lights the menorah, even though it doesn't need to be him, but given that it typically was him, this is how to light the menorah. And this is another corroborative statement from the Rishonim that we always need to keep our eyes open, where even when the Torah is talking, and even when the Torah is talking about mitzvos, that doesn't mean that everything the Torah says is a mitzvah. Sometimes the Torah can be describing a certain nohag, and perhaps saying how it should be, but one needs to keep a careful eye on the fact that the Torah did not tell Aaron to light the menorah, it told him how to do so, when he does, for Aaron typically did so. But it's kosher even with a non-Kohen. That's the comment of the Ritva. So we began with the Sforno, and then we moved backwards to the Ritva, who's already in the Rishonim, and now let us move forwards to Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen, the Meshech Chochma, who quotes the question again of the Tosos Ishanim. How can we say that even a non-Kohen could light the menorah? Here the Pasuk seems to mention Aaron specifically. And to this, Meshech Chochma says, I believe the answer is in the Rashi, the well-known Rashi, in the beginning of the Parsha, the first Rashi, Ba'alosecha. And Rashi deals with the issue of Smichus Parshios. The words of Rashi are well-known. Lama nismecha Parshas ha-menorah le-Parshas ha-Nesiim. What's the menorah doing with Parshas ha-Nesiim? We just in the second half of Parshas Naso had the description of all of the Nesiim, each one on his day. You can't have missed it. And then Balosecha begins, Balosecha es haneiros. What's the menorah got to do with those korbanos of the Nesiim? Lefi shekashera Aaron Chanukas haNesiim. When Aaron saw the dedications and inaugurations of the Nesiim, Chol Sha'az Dato, he became despondent. He was not part of that inauguration, not him, not his tribe. Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha, Hashem said to him, by your life, Shelcha Gedola Mishalahem, yours will be greater than theirs. Shata Madli Kumeitiv Es HaNeiros, for you are the one who will light and then clear out the Neiros. And hence, apropos of the Nesiim, comes the Parsha of Balosecha Es HaNeiros. Now, we need to remember, says Meshech Chochma, that Aaron does all the Avodah on an ongoing basis, but somehow he still felt left out of Chanukas HaNesiim. I mean, they're bringing Korbanos, he brings Korbanos. What was he left out of? Well, Rashi states explicitly that what he was left out of is the Chanukas HaNesiim. not the ongoing avoda, which is of course crucially important, but it was there's something about the Chanukah, there's something about the beginning, the launch. Everyone got the Mishkan going, and Aaron will take over from there, but he wasn't involved in the Chanukah. Well, says Meshech Chochma, if Aaron feels bad that he's not involved in the inauguration, then clearly what's meant to console him will be an aspect of inauguration. Namely, if the answer comes in the form of the menorah, it must be that we are not dealing, says Meshech Chochma, with the daily lighting of the menorah, but rather with the Chanukah of the menorah. As if to say, the inauguration, every vessel in the Mishkan had its inauguration. The Mizbeach had Korbanos, and the inner Mizbeach had the Keteres, and the menorah has the Neiros. The very first time the Neiros are lit is the Chanukah of the menorah. It sounds like an interesting usage of words to talk about the Chanukah of the menorah, but strictly speaking, it means the inauguration of the menorah. Well, says Meshech Chochma, if that's the case, then this is the consolation for Aaron. Namely, while everyone else has been inaugurating the Mishkan generally, you will inaugurate the menorah specifically. This question would still remain, how is inaugurating the menorah greater than inaugurating the Mishkan? But it's clear that the currency that we're dealing with is that of Chanukah. Once that's the case, says Meshech Chochma, it's seemingly we have no question from this pasuk as to what the halacha tells us. The halacha states that even a non-kohen can light the menorah. That's quite true. He can. We're not dealing here with the lighting of the menorah. We're dealing here with the Chanukah of the menorah, with the inauguration of the menorah. That was something that reserved only for Aaron, but it's specifically with regard to the Chanukah that Aaron is associated exclusively with the menorah. Mikan va'eilach, from this point onwards, anyone can light, even a normal Kohen, so to speak, and even a non-Kohen. So these are three very interesting approaches to the question raised by the Tosfos Lishonim, very different from each other, each one referring to a different angle of the situation. Well, we come now, having discussed the first Rashi, to the second Rashi, the word Baha'alosecha itself. Rashi, seemingly, is bothered by the usage of the word Baha'alosecha. Is that a normal usage? Is it the most intuitive word? We would talk about perhaps Hadlas HaMenorah. Rashi therefore comments. Baha'alosecha, and in fact gives us two comments. Firstly, says Rashi, the reason why Baha'alosecha is used, Al Shem Shehalahav Ola, since the flame goes upwards, that's the direction of the flame, Ksiv Bahadlakasam Loshan Aliyah. Therefore the Torah states with reference to the kindling an expression of Aliyah, of going up. And what's the message? The message is Shetzarech Lahadlik Achedeya Shalheves Ola Me'eleha. Aaron needs to light, that is to say, to keep the shamash or whatever the splint that he used near the fire until the flame is going up. He needs to wait and then move on. So Baha'alosecha is see to it that the flame goes up before you move to the next light. That's the practical directive from the word Baha'alosecha. But then, says Rashi, seemingly not completely satisfied with the first interpretation, V'o Darshu Rabbeinu. Mikan Chachamim also Darshu Rabbeinu, expounded from here, Shema'ala Haisa Lefnei HaMenorah. That there was a step before the menorah, She'aleha HaKohen Omeid U'meitiv, that the Kohen would first ascend that step and then he would meitiv, clear out the lights, or in this case also to light the lights. So Rashi has given us now two perushim. It's interesting to note the difference in Havana between the two perushim. What is the subject? What is being raised? These are not only two understandings of what the word Baha'alosecha means, but they also affect what or whom is rising. According to the first Perush, Baha'alosecha es haneiros, it's about the flame going up, and therefore, pardon me, the object of that is rising is the flame. Baha'alosecha es haneiros, the flame itself goes up. Whereas, according to the second interpretation, Baha'alosecha actually is Aaron rising. If there's a step there, if that's the message, then Aaron would rise. So it's quite a difference in interpretation. Does the flame go up or does Aaron go up? And whereas what we have said seems to be quite straightforward, it actually presents a basic question, because the answer is staring us from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Bahalosecha es haneros. It tells us that what's going up is the neros. So the object is mentioned explicitly. There's no room anymore to debate who's going up, what's going up, is Aaron going up a step, is the flame going up. The Pasuk says, Bahalosecha es haneros. And this question is addressed by Reb Leib Gurwitz. That's how the Rosh Hashiva of Gateshead in the Sefer Ma'ori She'arim is quoted. And he says that there is a further nuance here. And that is that there is no question that we have discussed two interpretations of Bahalosecha, who's going up. But now we need to come to the word es, which has kind of been hiding there. We've been focusing Balosfas and Neros. But what does the word S mean? Well, probably, generally, the word S doesn't mean anything, not formally. It has no translation. It denotes an object coming, Balosfas and Neros. It's dropped in translation, I believe, in pretty much every language. It doesn't translate as the. It's just there, but you can't put it into English. But you still need it in Hebrew. That's the way that it is. We've mentioned, I believe, in the past, there was a move to drop the letter S even from Hebrew. They just felt, I guess, people are in such a hurry that, you know, why say more words than you need to? And they tried to take it out, and nothing seemed to make sense anymore. In fact, they couldn't even describe what they wanted to do, because in Hebrew they said, Ratzu lo horid et ha'et, and they couldn't even see that with the word et twice. And so it's a functional word, but it has no translation. Balosfas haneros means the neros. And that's the first interpretation. But the second interpretation, says Reb Leib, looks at the word S differently, because the word S sometimes can have a meaning. The word S means with. It's a synonym, loosely, for the word im, ito, imo. And how does that help us here? Because the second interpretation, which sees Baalosecha as a reference to Aaron, the Neros have been mentioned explicitly in the Pasuk, but the message is Baalosecha es haneros. There's something else that needs to rise with the Neros, meaning not only do the Neros go up, but you go up. That's the step that Aaron would stand on. Baalosecha, all of a sudden, this changes as well with the second interpretation, that es assumes the meaning of with. And this is not just a lesson in grammar, because Reb Leib sees within this Rashi now a most important message. When it comes to learning Torah, the menorah, of course, we know is a reference to Torah, kiner mitzvah, the Torah or. And really, the question is, what is meant to happen when a person learns Torah? When a person learns Torah, the Torah goes up. The discussion goes up, it's happening, something else needs to be happening. As expressed by Rashi, when the flames go up, you need to go up. That means as a person advances in learning, he needs to advance in his own standing. If the lights are elevated, he needs to be elevated. And this, of course, is the ongoing call of the Torah, that as we learn Torah, not just to become better informed, but to become better. That's the unequivocal call from the Torah here. I believe we've referred to in the past to the exchange that took place between Reb Chaim Soloveitchik Zatzal and a certain gentleman who was known as a Torah scholar, Talmud Chacham, and Reb Chaim felt that this person was not acting in the way that a Talmud Chacham should. He wasn't refined and he wasn't in any way elevated, and it bothered Reb Chaim because that's not called learning Torah. And at a certain point, he called this person over and says, you know, I must say that when I look at you and consider how you are and how your deportment and your actions, it reminds me of a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So this, of course, is good news for this gentleman. He could only begin to imagine which Mishnah we're referring to. I mean, there's so many. I'll tell you which Mishnah says Reb Chaim. And Bin Bagbag says, in the end of the fifth parak, about learning Torah, hafochba, you should turn over Torah, be involved in it, tuchulaba, everything's in it, uvatechze, you should look into it, besiva v'lebe, grow old with it, wear yourself out over it, umina lo tazua, and not depart from it, she'enach imidatove, mena, there's nothing greater than Torah. Says Reb Chaim, you, for me, are an embodiment of that Mishnah. Doesn't sound too bad. Says Reb Chaim, I'll tell you what I mean. You have fulfilled basically everything in this Mishnah. Hafochba vafochba, you've turned over the Torah, you've involved yourself in Torah. Tekulaba, you've grown old with Torah, you've worn yourself out over Torah. You haven't departed from Torah. Every single part of the Mishnah, that's you. Ve'ein lecha midah tova himena. He didn't get one good midah from it. Ein lecha midah tova himena. Not one. So many good midahs in the Torah, you managed to avoid all of them. That's an achievement. That's what Reb Chaim said. And it's worthwhile remembering. And Reb Chaim, again, we note, was opposed in principle to the setting aside of too much time for learning. Sir, he was an opponent of the Musar school, because he felt if you learn Torah the way you should be learning good middos. Well, if you're a Chaim Soloveitchik, that's probably true. And I'm always conscious of the story that's told by the Gabbai of the Shul in Brisk. He's involved in Shul matters, and he hears children playing outside in the courtyard, as children do. He comes out to, rushes out to shoo them away. The courtyard of the Shul is not a place for playing. And he sees this five children playing there, riding around, one's the horse, one's the rider, and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik is one of the horses, the Rav of the Shul, the Rav of Brisk. And he's completely appalled. This Gabi doesn't know what to do. He stops himself in mid-sentence. He's about to banish them. He's almost banished the Rav. But he couldn't contain himself, and he says to Reb Chaim, I mean, it's the Shul, and how can it be? So Reb Chaim said, yeah, I know it's a Shul. Let me tell you what happened. When I came out of Shul, so there were children playing, and there were, one was the horse and one was the rider, but there's five of them. So four of them quickly matched up, and the fifth of them was left without a horse. And he started crying, this little child. So Reb Chaim said, are you going to just walk past a Jewish child who's crying? I couldn't do it. So I became his horse, and he was delighted. So this is Midah Tova Himena from Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, with all the... So that's the message that comes out from Ba'alos Chatzaneiros. It's such an elegant way of looking at the second parish of Rashi, what seems to be, in a sense, such a formal, grammatical discussion, but the message is, you need to rise together with the Neiros. The Neiros are going up, so must you. Okay. So now, let's move a little further into the parsha. There are actually two dark parshas within Ba'alos Secha. One of them gets a great deal of attention, and the other, very little relative. Kivra Satava, dozens of psukim. But there is actually a section beforehand that could easily be perhaps not considered carefully, and that's the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. So let's have a look. Beginning of Yud Aleph, and as we'll see, Kedarka Shel Torah, there is a great deal to say. Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi Am Kemisonanim. The people complained. Rabba Asnei Hashem, it was evil in Hashem's ears. Vayishma Hashem Vayicha Apo. Hashem heard, he became angry. Vativar Bam Eish Hashem, and a fire from Hashem consumed them. Vatocha B'Ktzeh HaMachaneh. And it consumed at B'Ktzeh HaMachaneh, which we'll need to see what that means. So, the people are complaining. What are they complaining about? Well, Rashi tells us that they were complaining about they'd been moving too quickly. They said, in Rashi's words, Amru oilanu, woe to us, kamen labatnu baderech hazeh shlosha yomim. We've been traveling for 3 days already. Shelo nachnu me'inu haderech, we haven't rested. Complaining. Interestingly, the Torah doesn't say what they complained about. Mithonim, they complained. doesn't say what the complaint was, unlike almost every other time where it gives voice to their complaint. Rashi somehow knows. How does Rashi know? The pasuk just says misonanim. Well, the Be'er Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak Hurwitz, in the classic Peirush Be'er Yitzchak on Rashi, explains very simply that it is often Rashi's approach, and Rashi himself has stated as such on occasion, that when the Torah doesn't fill in the information explicitly, one can get it contextually. What is known as Dovar Halomed Me'inyono. You can understand the topic from seeing the setting. And therefore, what has been described at length over the last number of psukim is the travel of Bnei Yisrael, Vayimei Har Hashem, Derech Shloshesh Yomim. There's extensive discussion of how the journeying would go, how the traveling would go. That's the inyan. And therefore, if the pasuk says they were complaining and doesn't say what they were complaining about, look back to the context. They were complaining about the derech. Now, we saw just a couple of weeks ago that the term Be'ozne Hashem has a connotation of a very direct and immediate communication. All the times that we've seen in the Torah, one speaks Be'ozne someone, Yehuda wants to speak Be'ozne Yosef, it's very direct. And the point is that the situation of the Jewish people in the Midbar, essentially whatever they did went, so to speak, straight to God's ears. Whatever they did was Be'ozne Hashem. That's the situation in the Midbar. And in fact, probably the most, I would say, atmospheric marker of this episode of the Misonanim is that it happens so quickly. It's almost over before it started. It's three psukim, the whole thing. Pasuk Aleph is the sin and the punishment. Pasuk Beis is, they tell Moshe davens and it stops. And Pasuk Gimel is, they call the place, they name the place, it's over, just like that. And the point is that's exactly the way that it was. Everything happened so quickly. And any response to a wrongdoing was swift. And interestingly, once again, with an eye on the Lashon HaKodesh here, the pasuk says, Vayihi ha'am kemis onanim. The people were kemis onanim. What is the meaning of the word kemis onanim? Le'etonen means to complain. But what's the letter kaf? Normally, the letter kaf is kaf hadimyo, that it's like, A is like B. Like the Nachash says to Chava, ve'isem kelokim. But that, in that case, then kemis onanim means that they were like complaining. They were as complainers. Except they seemingly were not as complainers because they were complaining. When you're complaining, you're not like a complainer, you're complaining. So what then is the meaning of the letter kaf? Well, the letter kaf has another meaning. Not only can it mean, have the form of kaf hadimyon, like A, like B, but there's also a kaf which is kaf hatekifus, as something happens. Vayihi kemeshiv yado, as he brought his hand back. Potiphar's wife says, Vayihi kaharimi koli, as, means these things happen straight away. And that is what's happening here. Vayiham kemis onanim, as they were complaining, as to say, no sooner had they complained, kemis onanim, vayi kemeshiv yado, vayi karimi koli, and there was already a response. That's really the point. So that is one way of understanding the misonanim. There's an interesting question that's raised by Pasuk Gimel, because Pasuk Gimel says, Vayikra shema makoma hu taveira. They call that place taveira. Okay, so we now know that there's a place along the travels of Bnei Yisrael which is known as taveira. The problem is, the stations of the journeys of the Jewish people are recorded later on, as we know, in Parshas Maaseh. And if you look in Parshas Maaseh, it states, Vayis'u mimidbar Sinai, traveled from Midbar Sinai, Vayachanu b'kivr satava, and they encamped in Kivr satava. Now Kivr satava is going to be next, which means apparently they went straight from Sinai to Kivr satava, and yet the pasuk here has told us explicitly that there's something happened in between, a place called Taveira. They renamed it. So why is there no mention of this place that they renamed in Parshas Maaseh as it records the stations and journeys of the Jewish people. The Abarbanel, and again there's two Perushim al Derech HaPshat, the Abarbanel explains that we have no notion of the Jewish people camping there. It's a very, very much al Derech HaPshat. What you have in Parshas Maaseh, it details the Masaos. The Masaos is Vayisu Vayachanu. They traveled to one place, then they set up camp. That's the Machaneh. Here, something happened on the way, but they were in transit yet, and that's really the point. The point is they've been traveling for 3 days, and then they complained. No one had set up camp. If they set up camp, they'd be fine. No one had set up camp. They complained. Retribution occurred. We don't know how long it took, but by the time it finished, they were moving on. They were in transit still. And therefore, it's not a masa. It's not a station. That's why it's not mentioned there. Quite a different interpretation of Lamokum Hahu is to be found in the Ramban. So the Pasuk tells us that in the Pasuk, the end of Pasuk Aleph, that the fire came out, Vatochal Bikzeh HaMachane, and it consumed at the edge of the Machane. Now, Ramban explains, which is actually a big chiddush, that Lamakom Hahu, they called that place Tav'era. That place doesn't refer to a geographical location in which they found themselves. That place means that place in the camp, meaning it was almost like a maskeret, because there was a certain part. It was the Tav'era corner of the camp, and it actually accompanied them wherever they went. They set up camp, and there was the Zecher le Tav'era. That's Lamokum Hahu. And therefore, says Ramban, it's not one of the Masos. And the Pasuk doesn't say that it's one of the Masos. They didn't rename a place anything. They actually dubbed a part of the Machane Tav'era. Very interesting. Now, who are these Misonanim? Yahamkim Misonanim. Well, Rashi comments, and we need to take a good look at Rashi's words. Yahamkim Misonanim. Ein Ha'am. Ela Rishoim. If you see the word Ha'am, you should know it has a connotation. It means Rishoim. Bechenu Omer, similarly Ma'es Ela Amazeh, and therefore Vahi Ha'am Kamasonim means the lower echelons of the people, the Rishoim. They were the ones who were complaining. Okay. In contrast, says Rashi, Ukashim Kesherim, and when the Jewish people are at their best, Keruim Ami, then they're called, Hashem says, my people, Shinema Shelach Ami, etc. Okay, so we have this distinction in Lashon HaKodesh between Ha'am and Ami. Ha'am, negative, refers to people who are lacking, and Ami is the best, is the higher level. Well, we should know it's not so simple, as Mepharshim have pointed out, because we find the word Ha'am used in positive connotations, and we find the word Ami used in negative connotations, in which case we need to reckon with that. The word Ha'am we find in a positive connotation. We just came back from Shavuos. Vayan kol Ha'am, vayomu kol shedibar Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. That's our finest hour, and we're called Ha'am. It's a positive connotation. By contrast, the word Ami is found in a negative connotation in the Haftarah for Shabbos Chazon, Yishayahu, Perek Aleph. Shouldn't say it's the Haftarah for Shabbos Chazon, it just has been for the last few hundred years. Yadasho kanehu v'chamor evus balav, Yisrael lo yada, Ami lo isponan. My people, they're not paying attention. So it doesn't sound like they're tzaddikim. So how are we to deal with these conflicting usages, both of Ha'am, positively, and Ami, negatively? Well, some Mepharshim take them on one by one. The Maskil HaDavid says, if we wish to preserve the Klal of Rashi, we will say that, in a sense, there's a Chiddush in each place. When it comes to Vayan Kol Ha'am, they all said Na'aseh V'nishma, that's the Chiddush. All of them said, meaning even the lower echelons of the Jewish people, they got themselves together, even the Am said Na'aseh V'nishma. Okay, with regards to the Amilo Isponan, which sounds negative, so the Maskil HaDavid says, or we could perhaps have said the mirror image of the first answer, that even the higher levels generally aren't really paying much attention. But the Maskil HaDavid says that even at a time of Tochacha, it's a very difficult time, that Yeshaya Perek Aleph, nonetheless Hashem still reiterates and reassures the Jewish people that they are yet his people, even as he's criticizing and chastising them. Okay, all of this to preserve the klal, preserve the general rule of Rashi. However, we should know, and this is a general question that runs throughout Rashi's Peirush, we should know that there is another approach entirely to this principle, and here it's enunciated by the Netziv in his commentary to the Sifrei, that there is no principle here. Rashi never meant to establish this as a matter of principle, as if to say that the word Ha'am as a rule will refer to Rishoim, and the word Ami as a rule will refer to Tzadikim. Rashi didn't say that. Rather, what Rashi is looking to establish is the meaning of that term in this context. You should know the sufficient usage of the word Ha'am as Rishoim, and that's how it's to be understood here. But not to say that the word always means that. Now that's very interesting, because Rashi's words are Ein Ha'am Ela Rishoim. It really sounds like it's a principle. But rather than a tziv is maintaining that he means here. The reference here is to none other than Rishoim. Doesn't mean everywhere, by no means. And interestingly, there's corroboration of this approach to Rashi from a Rashi later in the Parsha, when we come to the episode with Aaron and Miriam in the beginning of Perek Yud Beis. Vatzitaber Aaron v'Miriam. Rashi comments on the word daber. Now we know that daber has a harsh connotation, and Rashi's words are Ein dibur haneemar bechol makom ela loshon kasha. Dibur, as it's found everywhere, bechol makom loshon kasha, and goes on to contrast that with the term amira. Ve'ein amira bechol makom ela loshon raka. Now those words of Rashi are very important, because here Rashi, when he wants to tell you about the connotation of the word dibur as opposed to amira, adds the word bechol makom. That's when Rashi means to say that there is a klal in play here. Always dibur is loshon kasha, always amira is loshon. Which means when we come back to our situation, Rashi spoke about the meaning of ha'am, but he didn't say ein ha'am bechol makom. So that corroborates the position of the Netziv that Rashi does not mean to propound a principle here, but rather to establish the meaning of this word in this context specifically. And the Netziv, we should note, has an ally from earlier times, and that is the Mizrahi, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, Rosh HaMedabrim on Rashi's commentary. For the Mizrahi comments on the fact that Rashi, in Parshas Vayera, for example, with regards to the Akedah, we find the usage of the word no. Hashem turns to Avram and says, Kach no es bincha. Rashi famously comments there, Ein no ela loshon bakosha. The word no is an expression of request. Hashem is requesting of Avram, be bakosha mimcha, as Rashi goes on to explain. And the Mizrahi states there that Rashi does not mean to give you an across-the-board interpretation of the word no, as if to say that the word no always means please. It doesn't always mean please. In fact, the primary translation of the word no is now. And there are many instances where you can't really understand that the word no means please. It means now, and Rashi never meant to say that it always means that. On the contrary, I think Rashi uses this expression, Ein no el loshon bakosha, something like 8 times throughout his Peirush, and the Mizrahi asserts that he says it 8 times because he means it to be true in those 8 times, not generally. Esav comes in from violating all the averos he was able to accomplish in one morning. He comes, he's hungry, he says, Haliteini no min adoma adoma zeh. What does no mean? Please? Possibly. I mean, perhaps even Esav, the other person's got the food, so then even Esav would be polite, perhaps. But the word no more likely means give it to me now. I mean, that's Esav talking. In fact, there are those who even say that the word no in that context relates to the word no as we find it in Parshas Bo, which tells you not to eat the Korban Pesach, no. And no means raw, partially cooked, not fully cooked. And that's what Esav is saying, Haliteini no, I don't care if it hasn't finished cooking, it won't make a difference to me. It's a Haliteini no. But certainly the Pasha says it doesn't mean please. And again, that's the Mizrahi really pre-echoing what the Netziv is saying, that if Rashi doesn't say the words b'chol makom and he makes these assertions or establishes these interpretations, they are for their context, not for all context. That's a very interesting question to accompany us. So that's the ha'am here. But there is a second approach to the misonanim, which is also a great deal to think about. It's based in the Sifrei, and Rashi quotes it. When the Pasuk says, Rabba Osne Hashem, Rashi explains, Toana, Shi Rabba Osne Hashem. They were looking for almost like a pretext to complain, that Hashem should hear. Shemiskavnim Shetavoba Osnov, the Yaknit. They want Hashem to hear them complaining so that he'll be upset with them a little bit. It's a very startling comment. They want Hashem to hear, and they were looking to upset him. Why? Well, what could that possibly mean? Well, we've already seen a couple of weeks ago in the introduction of the Netziv to Bamidbar that the Jewish people had sometimes a difficult time living under such close quarters with the Shekhinah. And from a certain point of view, they're looking to cool things off, if they can, to create maybe a bit of distance, that they aren't in such a demanding state the whole time. Well, what's the way to do that? After all, Hashem seems to be interested that they should be in that state. So they were looking to make Hashem, so to speak, uninterested, or no longer interested in being as closely connected to them as he was before. And the way to do that is to complain. Because when one side complains to the other, the natural reaction is, you're complaining, I've done all this for you and you're complaining, you don't want, and maybe we won't be so close together. And from a certain point of view, that's what the Jewish people are looking for. It's difficult for them to be in such close quarters with the Shekhinah. And therefore they launch this complaint. And what's interesting is, when you think about their complaint, it's not a very big complaint. It doesn't really sound that. In other words, they're in the desert. I mean, most people take longer than 3 days. In the event, it took them much longer. But even in this time, they've been going for 3 days. Okay, they've been going for 3 days. I mean, you're in the desert. It's not a place to hang around. It's almost as if they're looking for something. And interestingly, because if a person wants to complain, the question as to whether there's something to complain about is academic. It's practically irrelevant. Complaints are the product of people that wish to complain, not complain-worthy situations. They can be produced out of thin air. And looked at in this way, we can go back to the word Vayihi Ha'am Kermis Onadim. They were like complainers. To return to the letter Kaf as the Kaf Hadimion, it was like complaining. In what way is it like complaining? Because it wasn't a real complaint. It wasn't a legitimate complaint. They thought of something, and therefore the Torah doesn't even dignify their complaint by calling it a complaint. They were like a complaint. They simulated a complaint. Kumisonim. And perhaps further along these lines, it's for this reason that the Torah doesn't even tell us what they said. That in a sense is an indication that it doesn't matter what they said, because they would say anything. There was nothing wrong. So they're just looking for something. So whatever it is, they reach for the first thing. We've been traveling, it's about traveling. If they've been staying in the same place for too long, it would be about that. And therefore, because the actual content of the complaint is incidental and not inherently meaningful in terms of the complaint, it's completely missed out. And the Torah just says they were complaining. About what? About whatever. Doesn't matter. Look at Rashi or work it out, or because it was kumis onanim. But as we see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not that quick to let them go, because our relationship with Hashem isn't one that we opt in and out of. It can be demanding sometimes, and it has been demanding at times, but it isn't a relationship where the existence of the world depends on it, and therefore it's not acceptable for us just to create distance when we feel like it, or that's an important message that really comes out from this very, very brief parsha of the misonanim. From here, and we'll have to deal with Kivra Satava, and we'll need its own discussion on another occasion, Amit Hashem, but I'd like to move to the episode of Aaron and Miriam. There's a very interesting comment of Rashi. So Aaron and Miriam, they are talking about Moshe. They do not feel that the way that he has been conducting himself was necessary or was warranted. They don't realize that Moshe's level of nevuah is significantly higher than theirs. And that's their complaint. Even though, in our terms, we would say it's lito eles, certainly according to Rashi, they feel bad for Tzipora. But now, Hashem comes down and speaks to them and tells them and details here all the differences between Moshe's level of nevuah and their level of nevuah. This is where it came out, which is actually the basis of a very interesting comment of Rabbi Chonon Wasserman Zatzal. For the Rambam talks at great length about the episode of Miriam. There is what to learn from Miriam, because no one was in a better position vis-a-vis Moshe than Miriam. No one would ever be in a more legitimate position to speak about someone than Miriam. She's his sister, she's his older sister, she saved his life, she has a lot of credit by Moshe. And she only meant it, let's say, for Tzipora's good, and she didn't mean anything bad, and etc. and so forth. And says Rambam, that's why it's so important to learn from Miriam, because no one will ever be in a better position vis-a-vis speaking Lashon Hara than Miriam, and if it wasn't acceptable in her situation, that's the lesson. Infinitely less likely to be acceptable in our situations. That's the lesson to learn from Miriam. On the contrary, if we speak about Miriam in that way and learn the lesson, so then that's a schus for Miriam, I think. She's generated a mitzvah to help people not speak Lashon Hara. If we speak about Miriam and then go and speak Lashon Hara, so I think speaking about Miriam is itself Lashon Hara, because it's not even the Toelis, I think. But the interesting question is, here we see that Miriam was punished. She did something wrong. What did she do wrong? Lashon Hara. Says Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, see, apparently, or one could argue, that she did something significantly more wrong than just, quote-unquote, Lashon Hara. Namely, we have 13 Kari Emunah, 13 principles of faith, and to deny one of them is a terribly grave avera, and one of them is the unique level of nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, of all the people to speak at Lashon Hara about, and of all the things to say about them, her words also involve denying the uniqueness of the level of nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's kfira in one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. That sounds actually worse than Lashon Hara. And if that's the case, then perhaps one can't learn anything from Miriam about the gravity of Lashon Hara, because maybe something else entirely much worse was going on here. It's an interesting shaila. Of all the people to speak about, and of all the things to say, this was the Lashon Hara that also involved denying one of the Ikrim. And Rabbi Chonon Wasserman gives a very interesting answer, and says that it can't be a principle of faith until we know it. And we know it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told it to us in the Torah. And the point that he told it was in response to Miriam talking about Moshe. Meaning, Miriam was probably the last person in history who could say this about Moshe, and for it to be only Lashon Hara. Because moments later, when Hashem told them that Moshe's Madrega is on a higher level, at that point, that takes its place as one of the Ikrim, to say that about Moshe now would be worse than what Miriam did. So that's very interesting in terms of the timing, so says Rabbi Chonon. But in any case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu details at length the differences between the uniqueness of the Madrega of Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and then says, Pe'el Pe'er, Pasuk Chesed, Perik Yud Beis, Pasuk Chesed. Pe'el Pe'er, Da Pe'er, I speak to him mouth to mouth. Umarev Levechidus, it's a vision, it's not any type of riddle. Utmunas Hashem Yabid, you can see the picture of Hashem. All these terms, of course, need to be understood as the Rambam and Ramchal discuss them at length. Umadua lo yoresem ledaber ba'avdi b'moshe. So why then were you not afraid to speak about my servant Moshe? Rashi comments on the what seems to be the dual phraseology, ledaber ba'avdi b'moshe, my servant Moshe. And Rashi says, or more correctly, or as Rashi himself expresses, Eino omer ba'avdi Moshe. It doesn't say my servant Moshe, but rather ba'avdi b'Moshe. It sounds like there's two things here, meaning ba'avdi afal pi she'eino Moshe. Either one of these are a reason not to. You should have been afraid to speak about him in that way. If he was my servant, even if he's not Moshe, but he's my servant. And by contrast, conversely, Moshe afilo eino avdi. And even if he's Moshe and not my servant, kedai ha'isim liromi panav. And Kal v'chomer, if he's both, if he's Avdi and Moshe. Now these words of Rashi need yet to be understood, because Rashi is saying there's on either of these accounts you should have been afraid to speak about him. You should have been in fear, either if he's Avdi, even if he's not Moshe, and if he's Moshe, even if he's not Avdi. Kal v'chomer, if he's both. And Mefarshim are asking, well, what does it mean if he's... I think I understand the first one better. If he's Avdi, even if he's not Moshe. So he's not Moshe, but he's Avdi, should be afraid to talk about it, Eved Hashem. Okay, he's not Moshe, he's Avdi. But if he's Moshe and not Avdi, what is Moshe if he's not Avdi? I mean, that's Moshe. What does Moshe look like if he's not Avdi? It's a very difficult Rashi. And this Rashi is discussed by the Kli Chemda in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. And the Kli Chemda explains, and he prefaces by referring to a very interesting Gemara in the end of the fifth parak of Maseches Brachos, Daf Lamed Dalet Omid Beis, which talks about a time that the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai took ill, seriously ill, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he sent a message to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, to his colleague, and he says, please daven for my son. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, he says, he near Moshe ben Birkov, he put his head between his knees, he went into a complete state of focus. After a short while, he said, the child is okay, and they checked, the child was okay, Mamash recovered from what was like a life-threatening illness. Very, very good, very nice. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Nossi, commented about that. He said, if I would have done that all day, it could be that nothing would have happened. But don't think that means that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa is greater than me. It's just his tefillahs are more accepted than mine. Why? Because, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, ani dome lesar b'fnei ha-melech. I'm like an official before the king. So the official is very choshev, but he can't just come in whenever he wants. I mean, there's times, v'hu dome le'eved l'fnei ha-melech, and he's like the servant before the king. You know, the servants, they come and go as they please. It's very interesting. Who's more choshev, though? The official, the tsar. But the servant can come whenever he wants. So he's like the Eved. So he has Hashem is a special place for him, so to speak, and his tefillahs are accepted. But what does this mean? It's still very enigmatic, these terms, Sar b'fnei ha-melech, Eved b'fnei ha-melech, and the Kli Chemda explains that the reference is really to the two primary channels or branches with which we interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah and tefillah. Torah is the realm, is the domain of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Of course, no one's denigrating his tefillahs, but his specialty is Torah. He's the Nasi, he's the head of the Sanhedrin. And that makes him Sar b'fnei ha-melech. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, we don't have that much from Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa in the form of halachic teachings. In fact, I don't think we have any halachic teachings from Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, but we hear stories about him the whole time. Because his specialty was that of tefillah, the comments that we do have from him in Pirkei Avos are about Yirah Shamayim, that's his domain. And therefore, as such, his tefillahs are more accepted because that's what he devotes his life to. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai felt it important to establish that we hold that Torah is ultimately greater even than tefillah, so do not misunderstand that he's greater than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but his tefillahs will be answered, no question about it. He's the Eved, he comes and goes. That's how the Kli Chemda explains that very interesting Gemara there, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai versus Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. And the Kli Chemda says, this is now the understanding of the Rashi, where it says that on two counts you should have been afraid to talk about Moshe. Either if he's Avdi, even if he wasn't Moshe, And Moshe, if he's not Avdi, Moshe represents Torah. Torah Tzivul on Moshe. On both of these counts, on the one hand, he's the Eved, he's the consummate Eved Hashem. Vayomashah Moshe Eved Hashem. Even if he wasn't great in Torah, but his greatness as an Eved Hashem, you should have been afraid to speak about him. And even if he wasn't so great in, as an Eved Hashem, like Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, but he's Moshe. That's what it means, B'Moshe Afapi She'eno Avdi. That's how the Kli Chemda explains the Rashi. Interesting to note that this interpretation of the Rashi preceded the Kli Chemda by one or two generations. And what happened was, in the town of the Ketos HaChoshen, Rabbi Ari Leib HaKohen Heller, this is now in the mid or late 1800s, he was the Rav of the town, and the town, of course, well, was, I think, mostly Nastagdim, but there were Chassidim there. And it happened one month that the moon was not seen for the first 15 days. It was cloudy. There was nothing doing. And the end of the day 15, that's the end of the time of Kiddush Levana. There were certain Chassidim who felt, based on their understanding of the Zohar and other works, that if necessary, they could say Kiddush Levana on the 16th of the month. And the Ketos HaChoshen says, no, the final time is the 15th of the month. That's the Halacha, and that's that. Well, came the 16th of the month, and the moon appeared. And the Hasidim got together outside, and they said Kiddush Levana, contrary to the instructions of the Ketos HaChoshen. Well, this is old times. The Ketos HaChoshen heard about this, and he put them in Chirim for a month. No one's to talk to them, no one's to have any dealings with them, no one's to be near them. Chirim, serious thing. They violated the halacha, they violated the instructions of the Rav, that's that. Well, these Hasidim kind of sought company amongst their own, but no one in the Ketos HaChoshen's town is going to have anything to do with them. The Rav said they're in Chayrin. So nothing was happening with them in town. So they decided to seek refuge in Lublin, because Lublin was the city of the Chose of Lublin, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Horowitz, the great Hasidic master, to find a sympathetic ear for them, someone who will understand them, know where they're coming from, and take them in. So they make the trip to Lublin, and they send forth a message that they're coming from wherever they're coming from, and they'd like to come and see the Rebbe. And they get a message back from the Rebbe: do not come to me before a month is over. The Ketos HaChoshen has put you in Chirim, and that means no one is to talk to you, have anything to do with you, and that includes me. So this was quite a shock for them, because they felt that they're Hasidim, and they go to the Rebbe, and he'll sympathize with them. After all, his way of doing things was very different than the Ketos HaChoshen, but they had no choice. I mean, no one's, even here in Lublin, no one's talking to them. So they wait out the month, and finally, when the month is over, they come to the Chose of Lublin, they say, Rebbe, you too? You agree with everything he said? I mean, you're so different than him, and we're like you. And the Chose of Lublin opened up this Rashi and said, in terms of Avoda, raised the questions that we raised, Avdi and Moshe, if he's Avdi, not Moshe, and Moshe like Avdi, what does Moshe mean if he's not Avdi? And the Chose said, these are the two realms. There's the realm of Moshe, that's the realm of Torah, and the realm of Avdi. When it comes to Avoda, says the Chose of Lublin, we do things differently than the Ketos HaChoshen. We have our way of Avoda, and we think that it's more correct, and that's that. But no one can deny that Rabbi Ari Leib HaKohen Heller, said the Chose, he's the Moshe of the generation. He is the outstanding giant in Torah in the generation. And therefore, that's what Rashi is saying, Madua Le'Yereisen. He may not be Avdi in terms of the way we do things, but he's Moshe. How could you violate his instructions? He put you in Chirim. That's got to be respected by everyone. So this is a very interesting look at the Rashi, and of course, certainly plenty to think about, especially for Hasidim, and we'll leave it over there.